Capitol Report is a production of Senate Media Services.
On this week's program, the Senate DFL takes the majority in the Senate, and the governor addresses the media following his re-election. Senator John Marty talks about the separation of church and state, and Senator David Senjum reflects on his remarkable career. Stay tuned for this week's Capitol Report. Welcome to this week's program. I'm Shannon Lurkey. Governor Tim Walz, along with DFL legislators, will be in a strong position to secure their legislative agenda as a result of this year's midterm election. Beginning in 2023, DFLers will hold a 34-33 majority in the Senate and a 70-64 majority in the Minnesota House. The DFL last controlled the governor's office and the legislature during the 2013-14 biennium. This past week, Senate DFLers held a press conference to explain what it means for Minnesotans.
We have a slim majority of one seat, and thanks to Greater Minnesota, who is also sticking with us Democrats, and we're going to deliver for them and deliver for all parts of the Minnesota state from top to bottom, west to east. We are going to do the work that we were told to do.
I am very excited about the work that we're going to do in the future for the people of Minnesota. And I believe our caucus is committed to progress and want to put behind us the divisions, the fear-mongering, and the stalemate that has become endemic in the legislature, and replace that with thoughtful, forward-thinking, strong public policy and a budget that balances for Minnesotans.
Americans across this country indicated that they want a return to normalcy in the relationships between the two parties and not the extremes.
Like every family, we have where we agree and where we disagree, and I think we're just going to spend the next few months in our caucus. We'll start tomorrow figuring out what we need, you know, what we heard from in all the districts across the state and what they want us to do. And then I think we'll have the conversation with the House and with the governor, and, you know, we'll come to an agreement of what we think is best for Minnesotans.
Can you give us an example of a bill that you expect to be heard in the Senate that has not been heard in the last 2 years?
Price gouging, paid family leave, the PRO Act, legalizing marijuana,
ERA.
There is a long list.
Election reforms.
There is a long list, and there is a lot of work we have to do. And, you know, to the point about we are a big family and we will have disagreements, some of that comes out through hearings, through actually talking about the issues and making sure that not just amongst ourselves, but we're also letting Minnesotans know. So as we come together for the first time as a caucus and start setting our agenda, we'll be having those conversations internally. But we also want to have them with the people of Minnesota.
This caucus represents Minneapolis, St. Paul, suburbs, and communities around Greater Minnesota. So it is about a fundamental change. It is about empowering our members. It is about thereby empowering our communities so that we can reflect their needs and use that to improve the lives of Minnesotans.
Also this week, Governor Tim Walz took questions from the press following his re-election.
It's been the privilege of a lifetime and an honor to have the trust of Minnesotans over four very challenging years. And to have the opportunity to come back here is humbling. And I also know last night's vote was not just a pat on the back. It was a mission order going forward. It was about a vision about what we can do. Minnesotans were very clear about this. They're deeply concerned, make sure they're able to make their own healthcare decisions. They also were very clear that they trust and believe in the system of our democracy, and defending it is critical. They believe in the right to collectively bargain, to create a strong middle class. And I think more than anything, they believed in a hopeful vision of Minnesota, where we know things can be divisive, and we know we don't always agree on all the issues, but we should try and work together to solve those.
There have been crises that you've had to handle in your first term. Assuming there aren't for the second term, how will the second term look and feel different?
Well, when you're talking about me, I think we could probably assume there may be. The first term has thrown stuff at us. I think the biggest thing from that is we've learned so much. And I think, again, not that everything gets perfect, and I keep talking about that, but I think the one thing, if you go back and look, when things didn't go as perfectly as they should have, the next time you see the similar event came up, there's a much improved response. And I think one of those things is that we started out is that those are things we can continue to implement. We continued to govern throughout this entire campaign. And you don't get to pick and you don't get to complain about the hand you're dealt. That's what leadership means. I think what you're going to see is that move to that we talked about, more forward-facing, dashboard type governance, more of an ability to be flexible and move things. I'm, again, very proud. It was in our, seems like a lifetime ago, in 2019, we moved on the MNLAR system and were able to repair that. And we've seen that there's been some glitches on other things. We'll keep moving on. So I'm excited about that prospect. I'm excited about moving towards that more efficiency and outcome-based results.
The new voices that are coming into the Minnesota legislature means that our democracy will function better. When the folks who represent us more accurately reflect the community, that's good for all of us. The People of Color and Indigenous Caucus gets bigger and bigger every cycle. I am so proud to have been a founder of that caucus, and I cannot wait to see how it changes the conversations that we've had here.
In early October, before the 2022 election, 24 DFL members of the House and the Senate founded the Secular Government Caucus, which they've described as a, quote, coalition of non-believers and religious people to uphold our constitutional separation of church and state. Senator John Marty, a co-chair of the new caucus, joins me now. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
Before we talk about the caucus, I'd like to just take a moment and talk about the results of the election. Polls and pundits were predicting a red wave, in part because the party not in the White House tends to gain seats in midterm elections, and because inflation, the economy, and crime were polling as top issues. Instead, the DFL has achieved the so-called trifecta, winning the governor's office, maintaining control of the House, and now a one-vote majority in the Senate. What are Minnesota voters saying?
I think the voters are saying they like the message we've been talking about, the message about an economy that's fair to everyone, a message of which government stays out of our private lives and allows reproductive rights. I think those are messages the public cares deeply about, and of course the electorate is very divided, but I'm very pleased with the new majority.
More specifically, you've been in the Senate since 1986, in both the majority and the minority. How might having just a one-vote majority in the Senate impact the coming legislative session?
It's obviously a close one. We need each other as a majority, but I also want us to see breaking down some of this partisanship, and I hope that by doing this, I think my commitment, and I think our caucus's commitment, is to work together across party lines and to get things done the best we can. And there's strong disagreements, but that doesn't mean we can't accomplish things.
So let's move on to the new Secular Government Caucus, which is, according to the press release, a response to the rise of Christian nationalism across the nation. What concerns the members of the caucus about Christian nationalism?
Sure. I think it's the idea that somebody else's beliefs, that government is going to step in and impose or pressure or reward or support certain religious beliefs. I come at it from a very deep thing. My great-grandfather, my grandfather, my father, my brother, my daughter are all Lutheran ministers. I mean, we got a lot of strong religious beliefs. I do too. But my feeling is my purpose of being in government is not to impose my religious beliefs on others. That's simply not the role of government. And I think the Constitution has been firm on that. I've introduced a Senate bill in the past, a resolution to create a Religious Freedom Day in honor of, in memory of January 16th was the day Thomas Jefferson wrote the religious statute, the Virginia Statute of Religious Liberty. And I think that that's a beautiful document. It was the foundation of the First Amendment a year or two later. It's beautiful to say that we as a people, whatever your belief or your non-belief, we all work together and our government is going to reflect those differences and treat us all fairly.
In the press release, they point to a couple recent legislative proposals here in Minnesota as examples of a Christian nationalist agenda, namely the proposal to post the words "In God We Trust" in public schools, and also a proposal that would have removed funding from the Minnesota Historical Society because they had a guest lecturer speak on how the the founders of the nation had wanted a secular nation and not a religious nation or a Christian nation. Is there concern that some of these ideas about Christian government are seeping into legislative proposals?
I think in the past, the majority of Minnesotans, like myself, are Christian. But we've understood that there are people of other faiths and non-faiths, and we've got to treat them respectfully. And the idea of a Christian nationalism where this is a, that our country is going to be something controlled by people of a certain faith, I mean, that's contrary to the First Amendment. And I think we're getting to the point where we have a lot of people saying, oh, no, we want to have a Christian nation. We want to have our nation controlled by Christians. Some of the same people are condemning other countries. Oh, they want to have a Muslim government. They want to have something else like that. And that's never a good thing. It's never a good thing when you have people who are different to say, we're going to impose our beliefs on others. It's not good for religion. It's not good for public. It's not good for government. It's not good for the people. So I think that's what we want to do is say, no, we're pushing back against this, subtle and bigger steps to try and impose somebody else's religious beliefs on others.
I Googled the question, are Christians persecuted in the United States? And there were a number of results, as you can imagine. One recent article in a journal called The Christian Post pointed to some recent high-profile cases as evidence of persecution. The first was the COVID closures of churches. Second was the case of the Colorado baker who did not want to bake a cake for an LGBTQ couple, and that reached the Supreme Court. IRS investigations of Christian nonprofits. There are other examples that they're pointing to as examples of persecution of Christians. If you had a constituent who believed these things, what would you say to them?
I'd say if somebody's being persecuted for some reason like that, that's incorrect, that's wrong. If somebody's doing audits of just of churches or just doing this to them, no, that's wrong. But if they're trying to get fraud where people are doing fraud, we should be tracking and crack down on fraud everywhere. And in terms of like the Colorado Baker case, the analogy is, well, that's my heartfelt religious belief, so in my business, we're gonna not serve these people. We had this fight years ago in terms of Supreme Court had to rule that interracial marriages were not prohibited because a lot of Christians at that time said, I'm a landlord and I don't wanna rent to that couple because they're interracial. We've said, no, you can have that belief that interracial marriages are wrong, but you can't, when you're running a business, you gotta treat people, you can't discriminate against people. And so that's the issue of it. So yeah, let people, if they wanna think a same-sex marriage is wrong, fine, think it's wrong. But if you're running a business, you can't say we're gonna discriminate because of their race, because of their religion, because of their gender, because any of those things, that's what we have human rights laws for, and that's what the Constitution should protect. So I think my response to the person who's doing that is, hey, I respect your religious beliefs. Just don't impose them on everybody else.
So in any way, do the results of the 2022 midterm election, now the DFL does have the trifecta, in any way nullify the need for the secular government caucus? Or is it important to keep having these conversations, particularly in the current climate that we are still in?
I think one of the reasons for this is just so we can keep being aware of some of these pushes, because there's this group called Project Blitz that had all this whole agenda on how we're going to do this, then we're going to do this, and things like abortion were tied to it, and their religious beliefs on it. They're entitled to those beliefs, but imposing them on everybody else is what we're trying to push back against. And so I think this is a chance for us to talk with each other and raise the awareness of the fact that we people who have our own religious beliefs should not be imposing them on you or anybody else, nor should you be imposing yours on others. Practice your religion as you wish to do it, but don't impose it on others. And I think it's very important to have this caucus, and I'm very pleased we have such strong support from members.
I assume you'll invite new members to join?
We're going to invite all members of the legislature, Republicans and Democrats, and if there are any independents, invite everyone.
Senator John Marty, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
For the first time, the Minnesota State Capitol has been host to an altar for the Day of the Dead, honoring the Mexican and Latin American cultural tradition of remembering the deceased.
The significance is to remember our loved ones. Like, for example, a really beautiful way for myself to healing by losing my dad when I was 14 is creating the altar. He is the one who teach me how to do it. We do it like really easy and simple, not like a really this beautiful piece, but whatever we do it from our heart. So it's made it with love. So, but the main thing is just to remember our loved ones and just keep them in our head. And of course, sharing their memories too, because what we believe is that once somebody really forgets about you, it's like if you never exist in this world.
The multi-level altar on display during the first 2 weeks of November depicts the four elements: fire, earth, water, and wind.
We are representing the fire with the candles because we believe that we are lighting the candles to guide them back home. And the earth we're representing with the food. So as you notice, we have some fruits around, and also we have the cempasúchil flower. That is, the name is in Nahuatl, and it means a flower of 1,000 petals. But it comes from the earth too, so that's why we're representing the second element. The third element, that is water. As you notice, we have plenty glasses of water around. But also we believe, because all the journey that they are taking to get back home, they are thirsty, so we're, at least we're offering some water. But also, if you notice, trying to represent like the liquid in general, we have some beer around, we have some tequila, we have some sodas, and the last element that we represent is wind, and we represent it with papel picado, that I learned already that is chopped paper, kind of like interesting name to say it in English, so we are designed to just call it papel picado. And you notice the papel picado, we're trying to make it more unique to this event, and if you go around, it will say Minnesota State 2022 and Capital.
Finally, this particular altar uses the various levels to pay homage for specific losses in the larger community.
On the first level, we're trying to remember all the immigrants that have been trying to cross the border, but they can't make it. So if you notice one of the little details that you will see, there are no pictures in that level. There are no pictures, and also the crosses that we have, they don't have a name, because it's really hard to identify the bodies too. On the second level, you mentioned about that we have some school supplies, and it's because we are remembering about all the shootings that are happening on the schools lately. For example, I didn't know that on March 21st, 2005, there was a shooting on Red Lake, Minnesota, where 7 people passed away, 5 of them were students and 2 teachers. And then on the next level, you mentioned too that we have a George Floyd and Philando Castile. The reason is because in that specific area, level, we are remembering our loved ones that they pass away as the same circumstances as George Floyd and George Philando Castile. They are kind of like a similar, and many people is asking me like, why you not say it? I'm like, because we're not here to talk about how they pass away. We're here to remember their lives. And then the rest, we open it to the community. And it's been so beautiful to see how the community is participating and how they are even bringing their own pictures too. And I can definitely tell you that during this last week, we received over 30 pictures from the community.
He was first elected to the Senate in 2002, and during his 20-year tenure, he held several leadership posts, chaired high-profile committees, and championed several big initiatives. Joining me in the studio is Senator David Senjum of Rochester. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. It's just really a pleasure.
So I have to start by saying, wow, your career in the Senate is expansive. First off, let's mention the positions you've held: Senate Majority Leader, Senate Minority Leader, Chair of the Senate Capital Investment Committee, Member of the Senate Tax Committee, right now Chair of the Senate Energy Committee. Secondly, you've acted on several very high-profile issues, including the Mayo Destination Medical Center, the Viking Stadium, the Twin Stadium, the largest capital improvements project in history, energy renewal initiatives, and tax policy. That's an incredible resume, isn't it?
It's not bad, I guess. Life passes, through your fingers, so to speak. And those memories are substantial, I guess. When I sit here listening to them, we've done a lot of good things.
When you began your career, you were in the minority party. You eventually rose to the position of majority leader. Reflecting on your career, what attributes are necessary to be effective and to attain the success that you have achieved?
Well, Shannon, I think you come up here, this place is all about relationships. It's not about party lines. We play the party line thing, but for anybody that wants to come up here and be successful, forget about the party lines and establish those relationships. Work with people. Collect, as I think I said somewhere along the line, that your OMEs. You want to collect them, and you want to, to collect them, you have to give them, and that's all about relationships, and that's what this place is all about. And so my advice to anybody would be to, come up here with a purpose. Establish those relationships and decide what you're going to do. And by the way, then decide what's important to you, because you're faced with a lot of things. You can get yourself wrapped up in significant things or insignificant things, but stay on the significant things.
Speaking of significant things, when the Vikings stadium debate was before the legislature, most of your Senate Republican caucus did not support it. Yet, as majority leader, you brought the issue to the floor. Would you just tell us briefly about that day?
Sure. Yeah, it had been about 10 years. We delayed the Vikings stadium through a series of legislative sessions. I just thought it's time to vote on this Vikings stadium. And by the way, I was personally convinced that the Vikings, had we not done that, were going to move to Los Angeles. That wasn't going to happen under my guard. I didn't have caucus support. I brought it to the floor anyway. Actually gave our caucus an opportunity to elect a new leader for a half an hour, and if they wanted to do that, and if they didn't want this to be voted on. But they did not elect a new leader. We came down and voted on it. It passed with 36 votes. It takes 34 to pass it. We now have a new stadium, and by the way, we have our Minnesota Vikings, and they're not in Los Angeles. The St. Louis Rams are. They came out of St. Louis into Los Angeles, so that could have been our team.
Yeah. When you spearheaded the Mayo Destination Medical Center, you were in the minority. DFLers were in control of the Senate, but you worked to secure funding to improve infrastructure for Mayo's expansion. The DFL leaders that you worked with the DFL leaders, and they worked with you. I mean, it went both ways. And interestingly, then, during your farewell speech on the Senate floor, you talked about how, leaders or lawmakers used to serve without party affiliation. So with that in mind, what is your advice for future legislators?
Well, in the Destination Medical Center, I worked with Senator Scoy, who was tax chair at the time. Certainly Senator Bach was a majority leader, and we all knew how important this was, and we were able to kind of put the swords down and forget about the party stuff, and we knew it was important to Minnesota, and that was for Mayo to stay here and grow here, and everybody had a Mayo story, by the way, in terms of a relative or sister, mother, daughter, didn't matter. Everybody seemed to have a story, but in terms of the party stuff, we organize according to parties. We're doing it right now, frankly, in this building. But you don't have to play your Senate career by parties. You come up here and you want to get something done. You don't necessarily want to leave a legacy. It's not intentional, but you want to get something done because that's what you're here for. You don't want to go home with an empty pocket.
Well, so speaking of getting things done, we're going to talk now about the Capital Investment Committee. You've served on that panel for several years. You traveled the state. You listened to community leaders about their infrastructure needs. You championed improvements to local water and sewer infrastructure, higher education institutions, roads and bridges. You actually, in that vein, have put a stamp on this state. But maybe this one, maybe something else, what accomplishment gives you the greatest satisfaction for yourself?
So this is going to surprise you, because we have put hundreds of millions of dollars all over the state of Minnesota in totally worthy projects. The one I'll always remember is the community center in the Phillips neighborhood in South Minneapolis for the kids. They had nothing. They had a broken down swimming pool. They didn't even have support by the city of Minneapolis to fix it. And I said, we're going to fix this thing. And today these are kids that live, it's the drugs, it's the gangs, it's the graffiti, it's it's a prostitution. It's worse than that. I don't want to paint that neighborhood as totally bad, but that's what these kids grow up in. And I was convinced that these kids deserve something better than that. And we built this Philip Community Center for them. And I drive by there kind of secretly once in a while, and I kind of, if you will, revel a little bit in pride in terms of the fact that we're able to do this for these kids.
For several years, you've been traveling to Germany to learn about their country's efforts to adopt green energy technology. And we've talked about it a fair amount on this program. From your perspective, where should future legislators focus their efforts as the state attempts to move away from fossil fuels?
Well, I think, first of all, you have to decide, or you have to, frankly, convince yourself that the train is on the track. Energy is changing. We're going to be a clean energy world in the next two or three decades, and then Minnesota's going to have to change with it. So how do we do that then? And it's wind and solar and things we probably don't even know about today. It's a lot of storage. Hydrogen's big. But, you got to wallow into this world, accept the fact that this is the direction that we're taking. And you don't have to jump over the cliff in terms of putting your state at risk economically, or, you don't want brownouts, blackouts, all that stuff. But you don't have to have that. But you have to progress. And that's all I've tried to do here, just move this issue, and hopefully we can move it to continuing, frankly, on a county basis.
Well, and so you perfectly parlay into my next question, because we all know, we just had an election. You didn't run for the Senate. Instead, you won your election to become county commissioner of Olmsted County District 2. So congratulations. As we just briefly on that election, were you surprised by the results and the fact that the Senate DFL has regained control of the Minnesota Senate by one vote?
Not totally surprised. Redistricting was hard on Senate Republicans this year. It was hard on my district. It was hard on Senator Osmick's district. I mean, almost districts impossible for a Republican to win in it. And then, frankly, Senator Chamberlain had an extremely difficult district that he drew to, and he ran and he lost. So we're up two. We lose three seats to almost to redistricting. You got to pick up three somewhere else. We picked up one on the range. We didn't carry the other one, and we lost the Moorhead race, and we lost the Cottage Grove race, and so that's where we are today. So I wasn't completely surprised. This was very, very competitive, very close, and I sat there the other night understanding that our Senate Republican majority depended on three precincts up in the Ely area, and if they swung our way, we'd be in majority. If they didn't, we'd be in the minority, and they did not swing our way, and so we are where we are today.
Senator David Senjum, I want to congratulate you on your stellar career. I want to thank you for your time, for coming on this program as often as you have, and wish you all the best.
Well, thank you so much, Shannon. Always been a pleasure.
Join us again next week as we delve into more topics affecting Minnesotans. I'm Shannon Lurkey, and on behalf of all of us at Senate Media Services, thanks for watching.